Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
My 100% focus right now is a simple fact that any math you use on these grain markets right now would suggest that if we do have a normal growing season this year, in other words, trend yield, which a lot of people would disagree with, if it does come out this year, we will certainly have a significant change in supply, certainly for corn, and a moderate change for soybeans.
Rich Nelson, Chief Strategist with Allendale.
So I'm 100% focused right now on, number one, spring planting dates, and number two, summer weather. As of right now, the government has an adequate discussion as far as okay growing seasons. Some of these private guys on the meteorological side are suggesting maybe some light problems this summer. So I'm still focused wholly on that yield issue, because that's going to be the prime determinant here.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So our membership includes producers of biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel.
Kurt Kavarik is with Clean Fuels Alliance America.
When our industry was created by the soybean complex 30 years ago, soybean oil was our primary and only feedstock to produce the fuel. Today it's about 50%. The other 50% is animal fats, distillers corn oil, and used cooking oil. So we've not only diversified in the fuel that our members are producing, but we've also diversified in the feedstock that we can produce it from. So ever changing and evolving and innovating to make some of the lowest carbon homegrown renewable fuels.
Says the members of his organization are frustrated with EPA's RVOs, renewable volume obligations.
EPA just released in December of last year a three-year renewable volume obligation proposal setting volumes for 2023, 24, and 25. We looked at this as a great opportunity to do as Congress intended with the law, and that was to send the market signal for growth, to require the fuel to be used so that we have the signal to continue to build out the industry. Unfortunately, that was a missed opportunity. They essentially flatlined our volumes for all 3 years. And to give you an idea of how out of touch this proposal is, our industry today is north of 3 billion gallons a year. This proposal in 2025 is below 3 billion. So all 3 years are below what our capacity and our market was last year. So you have to kind of scratch your head and say, what's the point of a program that's meant to send positive market signals to innovate in the feedstock production and the production of the fuel if the proposal is below our current market? It's disconnected from reality. And so we're working over the course of the next 3 months to put pressure on the EPA, the administration, and USDA through our champions in Congress to have a positive impact and get these numbers up.
He says the lack of clear communication across the board is concerning.
Another reason we're so perplexed by this is if you look at what this administration desires in terms of energy production, they want U.S.-produced energy that's lower carbon, that's creating jobs, and adding value here in the United States. What's a better solution to that than domestically produced, farmer-grown, low-carbon, 75% better than petroleum that's here today? And power vehicles that can't be electrified. So that's the conversation that we're having with the leaders in Washington. I think our message is being received. We just hope that we're successful so that we can get this number up and provide this certainty and growth for the industry that they deserve.
So what are the market signals?
When the proposal came out in December, immediately soybean oil prices went down. The RIN value went down. It had an immediate impact on all of the signals that people read to know, should I make the investment or not make the investment? You know, I can't speak to any of the soybean crush announcements that have been made, but I have to imagine that people are kind of running the numbers again, saying to themselves, okay, if these are the volumes that are finalized, does this project still pencil out? Are we going to invest this $500 million in a soybean crush expansion? And I think that's what farmers need to understand of what's at stake here. You may say, well, I don't use biodiesel or I can't get it. The fact of the matter is there's a huge demand for the product. Farmers are a key component of providing us with that feedstock, and they benefit from it as a result through higher value for their commodity. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we can activate the farmer interest in this. I think they're well aware. The leadership surely is. And have a positive outcome with this final rule in June.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, we've got a lot of safety net programs where producers have to take an active role, similar to the role they have to take with RMA and getting crop insurance. ARC PLC is one of those.
Zach Ducheneau is administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency, says while those programs are big, so is CRP.
I think we're going to be able to. We're really doing some innovative work in CRP, our Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. We're pushing the boundaries of that, centered around the administration's initiative on more equitable treatment, especially in some of our underserved communities. We've got three CREP agreements with tribes in the Great Plains and several other tribes interested. And that's specifically looking at the grasslands aspect of CRP practices. We get those three tribes enrolled, we could do up to 3 million acres. And there are other tribes that have significant land base of grazing land. So I see the 27 million as an achievable goal and not a cap. And I think we need to demonstrate the meaningful nature of working lands conservation. And anytime we talk about conservation programs, we got to talk about working lands and really emphasize the reserve in the Conservation Reserve Program. Because in 2022, we used about 2 million acres of CRP land to supplement livestock feed in other places. In 2021, we were over 3 million acres. So there's a reserve component there that we don't talk about enough. And it literally helped save some cattle herds up in the northern Great Plains.
He was answering the question of whether we can increase the acres. But what is CRP today?
Conservation Reserve Program is a additional option for producers. And that's really what we're trying to do at the agency and the department is give producers some choices. This particular program lets a producer take land that may not be as productive out of production in exchange for a rental rate. And then they have an opportunity for cost share assistance to improve that land, put in some buffer strips, do some development on that land to further the societal initiatives around soil health, climate change mitigation, carbon sequestration. It's a really critical opportunity for producers to consider, do I try to squeeze every last ounce out of that land that doesn't produce as this land right over here? And we really like the feedback we're getting from producers about it. It's a voluntary, incentive-based program. And with the CREP agreements that we have, it's even more and more locally led.
Now, there are other programs under the CRP umbrella, like grasslands.
In the grassland CRP program, the sign-up for which will open after our general sign-up on April 7th, we've got some emphasis areas out there in that Dust Bowl country where producers can get an added incentive if they're enrolling land that was part of the epicenter of the Dust Bowl, if you will. We've also got a wildlife migratory corridor incentive up in Montana and Wyoming. So we're really trying to find ways to meet the local needs of producers with those programs.
So with so much going on, how do you stay up to date with what's happening at the Farm Service Agency?
Our service centers stay real busy this time of year. They're always glad to see you. We do have a lot of this information up on fact sheets on farmers.gov, and you have the good fortune of having an administrator that's got his phone number on the website as well. You can call me and get it straight from the horse's mouth.
And again, the website, farmers.gov. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This is January 2023 data, so the first look at what this year is going to look like.
Caitlin McCulloch is director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center.
Just think back, 2021 and 2022 were both record volume years for exports. And January really started off on a negative note, at just down 16% below last year. Just for the month. And we saw a pullback almost universally across the board. Canada was even with a year ago, but China was down 25%, Taiwan down more than 30%. Japan and Mexico, few bright spots, up 7% for Japan and 31% for Mexico. But South Korea and Vietnam also both significantly down by double digits. Now, we did import more product. That was up 4% in total. And probably the big story out of this is going to be Brazil shipped of, I believe it was a record high for the month. And some of that is due to what the TRQ quotas are. Brazil is shipping into other countries' bucket, and this happened last year where they shipped a lot of product early in the year and then tailed off, you know, trying to get that preferential treatment before the quota bucket fills up. They were up about 5% from last year. Argentina sent 15% more. Canada sent 14% more. And so overall, a pretty strong import month. Now, one of the things that's happening with, you know, imports and exports is going to be, you know, what the relative currency value is and how expensive beef is relatively here and what we can buy it for and all of those relative values. And so it remains to be seen maybe what the rest of the year looks like. We have a fairly aggressive import projection out there. We're up about 7 to 10% over a year ago in 2023. So that big number up front helps our forecast, I guess, come true if you want. And then we have a fairly substantial decline in beef exports, but we were only thinking about 2 to 5%. So we aren't expecting this big 16% drop to continue, but maybe recession in the rest of the world, and U.S. beef is pretty expensive, but we'll have to wait and see on that a little bit.
And says there should be no end to additional imports.
We are looking at a declining production structure from a U.S. standpoint. So we're expecting less U.S. beef production overall, and imports will help fill that gap here in the U.S. Now, is it going to be 4% above a year ago every month? Maybe, maybe not. I think grilling season is coming up and people will want to have more product on hand for Memorial Day. So you might see it ramp up a little bit stronger actually coming into this. And then for beef exports, that market's really been driven by China in the last 2 years. And so to see them slip down to under 60 million pounds in the last, you know, 6 or 7 months, that's a pretty big change from what the last 2 years have been. And so I don't know if seasonality is what you'd call that, but it's really going to depend on how they interact with our market, as they have been such a driving factor for the last 2 years.
What about the latest government numbers?
Probably the biggest story for cattle country out of the WASDE is going to be the corn market. It did outline a more bullish stance on corn. The big story there is going to be that South America has had some production struggles this year, and Argentina is listed now at down about 7% from a year ago. So pretty big changes there on the corn side, and anticipating corn is going to be more expensive than maybe we thought 6 months ago. On the beef production side, not a lot of change. Their 2023 projection was revised up about just under 200 million pounds. No changes to imports or exports. And so those forecasts are holding pretty steady. On the price side, they did raise their live steer price up from 159 last month to 162. So a pretty big jump there as an annual average price. Now, their quarters, they do have a little bit lighter third quarter, about 159. So pretty close to where those future prices are right now today.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's really what we envision of not only focusing on producers and producer groups, but also folks who ultimately get the advantage of whatever it is we're producing and utilize it to produce products that are available to people across the world. And so this is an exciting day for me. And I want to thank the team of the Iowa Soybean Association for their leadership.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack at Commodity Classic on signing the first contracts for climate smart commodities.
This is a really important day for American agriculture. It is the beginning of a process of a number of projects that are going to transform how we farm, where we farm, what we do to produce, sustainably produce crops, livestock, product. It's an opportunity for us to celebrate what happens every single day on the farm, to reinforce the notion that our farmers, ranchers, and producers are the great stewards of the land and water, understand the importance of biodiversity, and are now structured in a way that with resources can move towards an even more sustainable future, an opportunity to recognize the development of new market opportunities that will reward farmers for those practices, a chance to expand significantly the ways in which farming operations can be profitable by taking advantage of ecosystem service markets, by conversion of agricultural waste into a variety of products, by developing local and regional food systems, all of which are incorporated in the 141 projects that we are funding, starting with these two very, very significant projects today. When you talk about soil health, you're talking about basic the fundamental aspect of agriculture and the commitment the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and their partners have made to soil health is a remarkable opportunity to really support a significant expansion of cover crop activity. And certainly appreciate the Soybean Association and its work with a number of other commodity groups to basically focus on ways in which we can use new technology, sensor technology and so forth, to really understand how to reduce the greenhouse gas footprint of agriculture. I think agriculture is on the cusp of being the first major industry of our overall economy to move aggressively towards a net zero future. So I'm extraordinarily proud of the work that's been done, and I want to thank the folks with Robert Bonney and his team at FSA and FPAC for the amazing work that has been done in getting to this day. I'm not sure you're going to see the contract that gets signed, but literally, it's that thick. There's a lot of information in there, and it's detailed because it has to be detailed. So this is a big day. I'm really excited about this, and I'm very happy that we could do it at the Commodity Classic because that's where the commodity groups congregate every year, and it's a really important opportunity. So I want to thank everybody who's here today. What I'm signing today are just two memorandums of understanding, one with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, one with the Iowa Soybean Association, who are the lead entities for the two contracts we're approving today. And this is the beginning of an exciting chapter, a transformational chapter in American agriculture, the revival of rural America as well. So congratulations to all who are involved, and I look forward to continued updates on these two important projects.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So, Allendale, we're going to be close to doing 40 years in the business.
Mike Lung is with Allendale, headquartered in McHenry, Illinois.
We started back in the 80s and have really focused on agriculture with producers, with livestock producers, with grain producers, and really just making sure that we're looking out for their best interests and helping them with volatile markets. I mean, especially with what we've seen since electronic, everything went electronic and how fast it's been, and then 2020 into all the volatility we've seen, being able to help people out while they're helping the rest of us eat and helping them get better prices and making sure that someone's watching their back while they're helping feed the rest of us is really what we're focused on right now.
So what are traders really focused on at this point? Lung says,
a lot of what we're trading now is continue to watch what South America is doing with their crop, because now we have a full South America corn crop that's actually smaller than last year with the cut that the USDA just gave us for Argentina. We've got the prospective planning at the end of the month, and then you have everyone's own analyst estimates that are going to be coming out beforehand. That's really going to be a big focus, including our own that we're doing right now. If you guys need www.allendale-inc.com to go over acreage, but that will be released next Wednesday. And we'll have our numbers. You have FC Stone. You have ADM. Everyone's going to be releasing their numbers to give us an idea of what we're going to be expecting for acreage as we go into the end of the month.
We start looking at the board, and for producers, it's trying to give them some indication of what to put in the ground. We talked about cotton earlier. Right now it looks like no indication that we want any cotton acres. Where will acres go this year, just based upon what y'all are watching?
If we took a snapshot of the board right now, it seems like the only thing anyone's going to want to plant is beans. Right now they are giving a very good look. They're staying high, elevated. You've got corn, wheat, everything's really falling off. So most people are going to stick to corn. You got king corn. Everyone likes planting. It looks pretty. But you are getting more of a head scratcher of maybe I do switch some more acres to beans and doing more of a late idea with that, with where we're currently sitting at, and especially with where input costs are sitting at. It's getting a little bit more friendly to look over at the bean market and say, hey, maybe a couple more acres wouldn't be a bad thing.
So that's what traders in general are watching. What's he watching in particular?
Well, the big one is going to be this more macro market when you're looking at the equities and the energies, and looking at that more from the idea of seeing a basket of commodity buying. you have everyone about inflation. You got the Fed talking about how it seems like it's more sticky than it should be. You're not seeing job numbers come down. So watching that potential inflation story work its way back in the mix is going to be a big one, because one thing you are seeing right now and have been seeing is market participation has been very low from an institutional standpoint. They've been relatively quiet. The only thing you've really had a larger commitment on is going to be the managed money long, but aside from that, you really don't have a lot of willing participants. So watching, as soon as we actually get the updates from the CFTC, watching those reports and seeing market involvement is going to be the big one, because as we get deeper in the season and you get more tenacity, more wants to have a stance on the market, that's where we'll be seeing. Because if you have managed money and you have a inflationary story come in, you get this buying a basket of goods. So that is a wild card event that definitely could be something that just kind of gets us out of nowhere with a very small lack of participation from a larger institutional frame.
Mike Lung with Allendale. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Now, in terms of the futures market,
Caitlin McCulloch, Director, Livestock Marketing Information Center.
Feeder cattle supplies ended the week on a sour note. They fell back quite a bit, almost across the board. They lost about $1.50 to almost $2, you know, for most of this year and into next year. Those fall contracts are pretty high, still over 220 in both October and in November, but closer to 191, 197 here in the nearby. And again, I think the nearby is going to be sorting out kind of what the feed outlook is until we get a little clearer picture. And then those fall contracts seem to be building in quite a bit of optimism about what the corn production looks like this year. But all of that remains to be seen. On the live cattle futures, the week ended a little bit down. You know, most of the contracts were down less than a dollar. The summer contracts are a little bit weaker than where we are today on the cash price and a little weaker than that fall price. That's a pretty normal seasonal pattern. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if those June and August contracts bounce around a little bit, depending on what placements do here in the next couple weeks. A lot of at least heavyweight cattle, those could be potentially fed into that quarter. Now, on the meat side of things, boxed beef closed the week at $284.91. And compared to last Friday, that's about a dollar or so higher. So holding a relatively strong value in terms of wholesale choice beef. And that's the thing we're going to be watching for any kind of indication that maybe retailers aren't moving product quite as well. Retail prices seem like they've been pretty sticky. There are some featuring, but they actually haven't moved the sticker price down very much on a lot of these products. So something we're continuing to watch.
So there is a bit of optimism right now in the industry.
I think the weather thing has been complicated by this anticipation that we're going to roll from a La Nina to an El Nino type of weather pattern at some point in 2023. And when that happens, that can have a lot of different impacts. So just as a reminder, La Nina typically has a very dry southern tier of the U.S. and a fairly, you know, colder, more wet northern tier. And so if you think about, we're still in La Nina right now, that would mean probably the northern tier states. So we're thinking Montana, the Dakotas, et cetera. Spring might be a little late for them, and their calf prices are doing pretty good. I was up in Montana about a week ago, and they were better than, they were closer to 250, 240 for those 5 to 6 weights. And in North and South Dakota, I think we're closer to 220 or 230. You know, those cattle probably moving out of those states just because it's still very much winter up there, and it might be winter for quite a bit longer. Like, you would need to feed those animals for quite a while until you could have grass in that part of the country. Now, where you are, you're probably starting to see a little tinge of green, but maybe not much, depending on how much moisture you've gotten. And the other factor of this is we're on 3 years worth of pastures that have just been probably really, really had some hard years in terms of not a lot of recovery, continuing to just drought. That's very hard to recover inside of 1 year. And so I think the grass problem here is still unknown how much it recovers, what kind of stocking rates you can use when it does, and then the timing of spring. So I think for a lot of the feeder cattle markets, you know, outside the Southern Plains, these feeder cattle rallies have been maybe a little early. Earlier than normal anyway. And some of that's just, I think, optimism about what the potential is. Now, if everyone has grass and everything's great, I think these prices are absolutely justified. But I think we don't know yet.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Some numbers are in regarding the first two rounds of applications for USDA's fertilizer production expansion program.
We received $3 billion in requests, 350 applications, over 47 states and two territories.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack with the announcement Friday at Commodity Classic in Orlando. For round one of grants,
we're announcing $29 million of grants to eight independent businesses that are located in the states of Alabama, Colorado, Massachusetts, Ohio, and Washington, where resources are going to be used to modernize equipment, to advance climate smart practices, to build production operations and facilities, and to expand the capacity of fertilizer production here in the United States.
The first round of grants focus on projects that could increase fertilizer capacity for this or next crop year. Phase two projects to be announced are designed for long-term self-reliance regarding domestic fertilizer and input production. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.